Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name's Matt, and I'll be your host for the evening. And that is because we are having our first ever Pit Lane Parlay Awards ceremony presented by Podchaser. Now, before we get to all the fun, we do want to thank podchaser.com, the IMDb of podcasts, where you can follow all of your favorite shows, hosts, editors, and etc. And you can search by topic, leave a review that can be seen no matter what platform you listen on, and create custom lists of your favorite podcasts and episodes. We also do want to give a shout out to Toronto Motorsports, the creators behind the hilarious cartoon stickers you often see on James Hinchcliffe's car, Robert Wickens' car, on all over social media, and other IndyCar stars on, and you can find them at Twitter at TO Motorsports. We really appreciate their support for the episode tonight. And let's check in here. We do have Mike and Jess on per usual, and we got Jim Aiello joining us for the second time ever. Jim, how you doing tonight?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited about round two here.
Yeah, no problem. And Mike and Jess, how you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Pretty good.
Sweet. All right, let's get to it, folks. Let me explain how this is going to work tonight. I'll be asking these guys questions about the 2018 IndyCar season. They kind of have a general idea of what's coming, but this is completely unscripted. So I'm going to ask a question. They may take a second or two to think about the response because they don't know what questions I'm going to ask verbatim. Each of them will give a different answer to the question, and then we will ask you on Twitter. We'll post a bunch of polls on our Twitter account. That is Pit Lane Parlay, P-A-R-L-E-Y. And then you guys will vote who you think should win the category. So it's not really a competition. You're just voting for which answer you think was best. So these guys aren't technically competing tonight or anything. And then we will let you guys vote and share the results. I think maybe next week or 2 weeks. We'll see how long we post these polls for, but so these guys will answer some questions I ask, and they're going to give their thoughts in general about the 2018 IndyCar season. So with that, we're going to roll right into the first one, and it's a doozy. It's Driver of the Year. So who was the 2018 IndyCar Driver of the Year? We'll kick it off with Jess.
Okay, so I actually didn't know this was coming, but I've got it right off the top of my head. I'm going to have to say Alexander Rossi. I know Scott Dixon won the championship, but Rossi had some amazing drives. And look at the 500, went from, 32nd to 4th. And then left this past weekend in Sonoma. Like, obviously, he was driving for a championship, but wow, what a drive that was. So that's my pick.
All right, Alexander Rossi for Jess. What do you think, Mike?
I'm going to go Scott Dixon then, although in full honesty, I really was ready to pick Rossi, and Jess beat me to it. But I mean, Dixon, what more can you say? Consistent all year, he had an average finish of 4.2 for the entire season and escaped the madness in Portland with just a scratch on his car nose. So, the fact is he's consistent week in and week out. And that's my pick for Driver of the Year.
Okay, we'll throw it over to Jim. Jim, who would you nominate for Driver of the Year?
You got to go Will Power. I mean, the guy has been one of the greatest drivers, probably underrated because he doesn't have the championships that he's had, or that, you know, he's come so close so many times before. But it's got to be Will, because not only did he have a great season, but he won the Indianapolis 500. And we've talked about it a million times, but checking off that box for him was such a huge relief in terms of who he is and what he's accomplished. He's been such an interesting guy to talk to after winning the 500. And so, To me, it was Will's year. I know he didn't have the success in the championship, but he still had 3 wins, which matched the series lead. He still had 8 podiums, which is just one shy of Dixon. And despite all the things that went wrong this year, he was in the championship fight pretty much until the end, until that last race. So I'm going with Will.
Is it safe to say that all three of us would say that Will Power would also win the best radio message of the year following his victory there at Indy 500?
Without a doubt.
It's not safe for work, but we won't repeat it word for word, but I think that's a safe vote. So to recap, Driver of the Year, we got Alexander Rossi, Scott Dixon, and Will Power as our nominees. So again, head to Twitter and vote for those. Next up, and I gave a couple of these, some of these awards a little bit of nicknames. So this is the Anti-J Penske Award for Best Owner of the Year. And so this could be for various reasons, whether it's just the best owner slash team for what they did on the track, best owner based on contributions to the series. It could be whatever you want, but who was the best owner of an IndyCar team in 2018? We'll start off with Jim.
There's a couple of good choices there, but I'm going to go with Michael Andretti. What he's done to turn around that entire program in the last couple of years, talking about a couple of years ago where Carlos Munoz, I think, finished 10th in the championship, and that was the best they had. And now they have a guy who finished second, a guy who finished fourth, a guy who finished ninth, and a rookie in Zach Veach who really came on at the end of the season. It's not just him, obviously. Bretzman and Millis and Rob Edwards, they've all helped turn around that program. But what he's managed to do while winning some 500s the last couple of years to turn them into championship contenders has been sensational.
All right, we got Michael and Jody. What do you think, Jess?
I'm going to have to go with Roger Penske. Obviously, he got to 500 this year, and then he got his 500th win this year as a team owner. Like, that's obviously not all in IndyCar, but that's still an impressive feat that you just can't ignore.
Roger Penske. We'll go to Mike.
All right. Thankfully, neither of you guys picked my choice. I was going to go with Sam Schmidt. I know a little off the board since they struggled a little bit in May, but, you know, to bring, Robert Wickens in as a rookie with you know, no open wheel experience in a handful of years since he was in the Atlantic Series was a gutsy move that obviously paid off. And then to, you know, show the amount of support that he's shown behind Robert Wickens, pretty much saying nobody will touch the number six car until Wickens is ready. The Conquer Paralysis Foundation, you know, trying to help out Robert as much as possible, and the support that him and his team have shown to Robert in this difficult time. So I'll give my vote to Sam Schmidt.
Perfect. Perfect. And a shameless plug, Jim Aiello did have a great article about that this week about the Schmidt team possibly running the 7 car at St. Pete if Wickens isn't ready. So, hey, good article, Jim. We really enjoyed reading that.
No shame in plugging my stories. You can help me.
I think this next one's the most important because I am a big livery guy. And so Mike's going first. Who had the best livery this year? Now, it could be for a single race. It could be for one they ran all year, for any sort of reason. If you like the color scheme, if you like the way the sponsors looked in the car, if you liked just the general feel of it, anything that comes to your heart, who had the best livery this year, Mike?
I'm going to go with Spencer Pigot and the green Fuzzies vodka. I loved that one. I think, when Newgarden ran it a couple of years ago, it was a slightly different bright green that I loved then. And I love what they've done with it now. So Pigot and the Fuzzies vodka car is the easy pick on this one.
We'll go to Jim next.
Yeah. Season long, that's my pick. But if you're talking about any race, it's easily the Gorilla Automotive Sebastian Bourdais.
Good pick.
Car at Portland. That thing was awesome. I mean, the color was great. Having the big ape on the back was great. I love it. I want him to run it every day, not just every race. I want him on his car, whatever it is, to have that paint scheme with him at all times.
You're not talking about the half Gorilla, half Seal Master car that it turned into, right? You're talking about the original one.
Yeah, that's fine. Whatever. It doesn't matter. As long as it's a pink Gorilla, I don't care.
All right, we'll turn it back over here to Jess for her favorite livery of the year.
Okay, so mine, I actually kind of talked about before. I got to see it in Indy for first time in person. And in person, it's much better than on TV. The Harding car this year, the colors were like beautiful in person. That pearl white color, I loved it. And it was sparkly, and we all know I like glitter, so there's that.
And while many people out there saw Harding car, just know at home that Mike Jokum saw a duck, so there is that too.
I did get over that, but it took
me a while. All right, so again, our nominees for that one was Spencer Pigot's green Fuzzies car. And I think Jim said in there that he loved it, and that would be the one I would have voted for too. We got Bourdais at Portland in the pink Gorilla car, which was phenomenal. And yes, that Harding car, especially from an aerial view, looked spectacular this year. Equally important, though, I know there are some teams that try really hard in their livery department, but some of them do end up falling short. And so I want to know if you guys had a pick for the worst livery that we saw in 2018. We'll start with Jess in this one. It could be just because of the color scheme, or maybe you just didn't like the driver, Danica. It could be for any reason you want. So we'll start with Jess.
Actually, I'm not going to pick Danica. Shocker. What? I know. I'm gonna do kind of a trifecta, actually, because it was like the exact same car times three for the Indy GP. Pretty sure that you know where I'm going with this, but the Penske cars that all looked identical. That was terrible. Sorry. It was terrible. It was impossible to tell them apart. And obviously, you know, coming from the fans' point of view, like, let's make it at least a little bit easier on people. But having three of the exact same car in the same race is just not okay.
So just to be clear, we're talking about that one specific race, or are you talking about the Verizon car as a whole?
No, just the one specific race when they were all the same.
Okay, I was going to say, because I love the gray Verizon car, so we're about to have some issues here.
Nope, I like the Verizon car. Just when they were all the same, I didn't dig it. That is a
completely fair argument. We'll go with Mike next.
I'm going to stick with the Fuzzy's Vodka theme here and go with the black and, I guess, silver with the silver stripes for Jordan King and Ed Carpenter. Just kind of boring. There was not much thought really to that. Let's just keep it black and put some silver stripes on it and call it a day. So I'm gonna stick with Fuzzy's Vodka on this one.
So if you know Jordan King was following Piggott in a race, you'd be like, oh, look, Piggott's car, and then King would roll by and you'd be like, oh, Jordan King's car.
Exactly.
What would the team photo shoot be like for you if you were shooting that? Would you just be like blocking out half the camera there?
Yeah, I just wouldn't shoot the Jordan King car.
All right, we'll turn it to Jim here.
Yeah, the Penske, like, yeah, when they double up or triple up on the same one, I hate that. So that's a good one. I don't know. I wasn't a big fan, especially because Andretti usually has some great, like, I love the Group 1001. I like the DHL. I like the Napa. But the U.S. Concrete one, for me, just does not hold up to the rest of what Andretti brings to the table in terms of liveries. So I know he didn't run it all season, but I just was not a big fan of the U.S. Concrete livery for Marco Andretti. So it's not my least favorite. Like I said, the Penske ones are the ones that get me, but yeah, I think the U.S. Concrete one just left a lot to be desired, especially when you're in a group of cars that are so good looking with the rest of those three.
Should we tell Jim that U.S. Concrete's back for 10 races next year, or is that too soon?
I was going to say, you're allowed to bash Verizon, though, if you want, because, you know, they're gone. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. So
if you have a Verizon phone at home, feel free to snap it in half. You don't need that anymore. Go back to AT&T Sprint, Cricket, whatever you had before. All right, so the worst livery nominees again was the Verizon Penske gray cars / silver, whatever you want to call them, at the Grand Prix of Indy, the black Fuzzy's car, which was shared by Ed Carpenter and Jordan King, and the U.S. Concrete car, which was on for at least half the races this year for Marco Andretti. Next category, kind of switching gears from IndyCar here, we're going to go, who do you guys think the best Road to Indy driver was this year? Now we have the Indy Lights series, the USF 2000 series, and the Pro Mazda series. Tons and tons of talent to pick from in there. We'll start with Jim on this one.
All right, well, I'm going to take the easy one then. The one that everybody saw this week in Portland, it's got to be Pato O'Ward. The kid was insanely good. 9 wins, I think, if I'm remembering off the top of my head, how many he did at Indy Lights, which I think he was on the podium 13 times. That was one of the best Indy Lights seasons we've seen in a long, long time. And I know there are only 7 cars in that field most of the time. I get that. But the natural talent is there. We all saw what he did at Sonoma. Qualifying in the top in the fast 6 was incredible at his first race. And then having a very solid race too. So yeah, Pato O'Ward, the easy nominee there.
And just a side note on that, I mean, that car has been a hunk of junk all year. I mean, you got guys going in and out of that car. And to see what he did was absolutely phenomenal. So, and shameless plug, I mean, we're big fans of Pato on the show, and Mike and Jess got to talk to him at Gateway. So we hope the best for his future. So that's an excellent answer. We'll turn it over to Jess next.
Okay, so I'm going to go with VK only because I think that he showed a lot of growth this season. Obviously, I wanted to pick Pato, but that was already taken. So VK, I think he showed a lot of growth. Obviously, mid-season, he kind of turned everything around and ended up taking the championship. So I I think he's definitely one to keep your eye on next year.
For sure. We'll see Arenas VK and Indy Lights next year. So excellent answer, Jess. Now we'll turn it over to Mike.
So quick shout out and honorable mention to Parker Thompson, who had a really good year in Pro Mazda and looks like he'll be testing for Pelfrey and Indy Lights at the Chris Griffiths test next weekend. But my pick is going to be Kyle Kirkwood down in USF 2000. He didn't lose a USF 2000 race after the May race at Lucas Oil. And if you count his F4 ventures, he won something like 18 straight races this year at one point. So obviously we'll be seeing him somewhere in Pro Mazda next year, but he really had an insanely dominant season.
Yeah, I mean, looking at his stats on paper just blows your mind. And hopefully we could see a rise out of him like we saw maybe when a guy like Spencer Pigot through the ranks. So to recap, we got Pato O'Ward, the Indy Lights champion, Rinus VK, who was the Pro Mazda champion, and Kyle Kirkwood, who was the USF 2000 champion.
I like how we all chose somebody from a different rank of the minor leagues.
We all picked the champions there, and then they will be at a track near you next year, so you'll definitely get a chance to check them out. Next one on the list, and this one could cause some debate throughout the community because there are several good nominations, and it's going to be tough for you guys to narrow this one down. It'll be the category is the best race of the season. Now, this could be for the way it finished. It could be because of the action we saw in the race. It could be because of the dramatic plot twists. It could be because Danica crashed 60 laps into the race. whichever your heart desires, what was best race of the year? We will turn it over to Mike, who always has the pleasure of putting me on the spot in every other episode. So he will go first.
Fair point. Well played. Man, I'm going to go with Road America. That was really, to me, the first race on a permanent road course outside of the rain fest that was Barber that we got to see these new cars in good weather for the most weekend. And it was an awesome race, won by Joseph Newgarden. So I will keep my answer short and simple and go Road America.
Jim, you're up.
Part of me wants to say St. Pete because it set the tone for the season with kind of Rossi and some of the Wiccan stuff. That was great. But I'm going Mid-Ohio. Mid-Ohio because it was a complete stunner. I don't think anyone saw that coming. And Mid-Ohio races have generally been not so fun to watch. And there was so much passing. And Sebastian Bourdais was incredible coming from the back of the field, making all the passes that he did. It wasn't quite like what he did at Long Beach, but it was still phenomenal. Meanwhile, you had a tactical masterpiece by Alexander Rossi leading and winning by, I think, 13 seconds. So you had a phenomenal run by the winner. Meanwhile, everything beyond him was up for grabs as guys were passing each other left and right on a road course again, where we hadn't seen a lot of action before. So that, to me, was the race of the year.
Yeah, and I usually don't sugarcoat it on Twitter. I usually say Mid-Ohio sucks, but you are completely right on this one. Turn it over to Jess.
I'm going to go with Portland. They put on a great show. I think they did an excellent job. And again, kind of a left field, like, what, Jacumisato? Like, that's awesome. So I was really excited. That race just, like, I think did wonders for IndyCar out there and brought in good numbers for fans attending and on TV also. So I thought that was just a great race.
All right, so our best race nominees, Road America, Mid-Ohio, and Portland. Interesting, we don't have any ovals on there. And speaking of ovals, we'll segue right into the worst race of the year. So this could be because it was, quote-unquote, boring. There wasn't any passing. There was just kind of a drama-less race. So who do you guys, and we'll start with Jess in this one, who do you guys think hosted the worst race of the season for all sorts of various reasons and whatnot? So we'll start with Jess.
Oh man, that one's tough. I think I'm gonna go with the GP of Indy. It just has never been what I would like it to be. I want it to be this great lead-in to the month of May in Indy, but it's always kind of blah to me. So I have to say GP of Indy.
Sidebar, would you think a change in a layout would help that race as far as like track layout? Do you think that would help?
It could. It needs some promotion too. I mean, I know they do some, but it needs more because, you know, it gets kind of shoved inside because it's not the 500.
No worries. I've never been a big fan of it either, to be honest, but it is good to have a relatively well-attended race right before Indy. So, and it's kind of become a tradition too. So we'll turn it over to Mike next.
I'm going to go with Pocono and not for the obvious crash that occurred. It wasn't particularly the most exciting race to me. Everybody got pretty spread out once the action resumed, and you know, part of that might have been everybody was you know, a little bit in shock after, you know, Wickens accident and whatnot, but not much really happened in that one.
Jim's turn.
Yeah, hey, Pocono was mine, so I'm trying to find a replacement here.
I think we're stealing all Jim's answers.
Let me say, and there's just a few, there's a few races that Rossi kind of saved single-handedly. Like I almost said Phoenix, but Rossi was kind of like the guy to watch there and put on a show. Gateway, he did, some of those guys did that. So I'm going to go with Detroit. I think both races were just fine. There was not a lot to go. It's always one of those races after Indy too that, sorry, Roger Penske, no one wants to be there. I mean, if it was a week later, everyone would be happy to do it. And it's a doubleheader and it's cool. And I like the idea of a doubleheader on a weekend, but everyone's exhausted. The racing is just fine. If not for the, the fun that the Chevrolet executive had in the pace car, it would have been, I don't think there would have been a lot to remember about those races. So yeah, I'm going to go with, actually, I should say Marco getting a pole was a big deal, but, other than that, I should say the actual racing wasn't the best. And like I said, it just, everyone's kind of slogging around. I don't know if you guys were in Detroit, but it's just, no one is themselves there. It's just kind of like, okay, finished Indy, got to get through this doubleheader just so we can get to Texas. And then maybe we can take a nap.
So. It's only a big deal that Marco got pulled because it's nice to know that he does something relevant every once in a while. So our nominees for worst race of the year were the Grand Prix of Indy, Pocono, and Detroit as a whole. So we will, and yes, a GM executive to have had a lot of fun and made it 45 minutes later than it needed to be. So we appreciate that. But we're moving on here. And so this question, and Jim is going to go first on this one. This question can go a lot of different ways. Uh-oh. It is the most boneheaded move or decision of the year. And no, so this can go with, this could be a bad pass attempt that turned into tears. This could be a bad pit strategy. This could be a bad driver signing or replacement.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not an off-season decision because we may or may not, but definitely are getting to that later. But maybe like an in-season driver change that was bad, a poor decision by race control or IndyCar or anything else that you would consider a bad move or decision. So we'll start with Jim on this one.
Oh, good. I'm glad you brought up bad race control thing because I was kind of...
Do you got something on your chest?
Yeah, I do, actually. I still have bones to pick with them calling or penalizing Bourdais for that pass at Long Beach. Just, okay, you know what? Even if it was illegal, I don't care. Let them do it. It was awesome. And don't try to sully it with your penalties and your rules. So no, I'm just kidding. I guess I understand why they did it, but I actually think he was forced out of that line. That's why he went where he went. And I think that move was phenomenal. I don't think it's been sullied by the penalty that he had to serve, mostly because I don't know, like a lap later he passed Dixon again. So, I will say though, that was the call that kind of aggravated me the most. And my little honorable mention was the confusion that happened around Iowa at the end there, but, there you go.
That was great from the stands, by the way. So the Iowa part. So we will turn it over to Jess here.
Oh, man. Okay. Man, there are so many. okay, so I think that I am going to go with the question mark that ended the season with Gabby Chavez in the Harding car when they started bringing in everybody and their brother to test for next season. But poor Gabby was kind of just left out on the sidelines. I think, you know, everybody who saw that happen, fans, insiders, whatever, everybody felt bad for him. Even though, you know, everybody knew the reasoning behind it. They wanted to try to get to two cars next year, wanted to test out some potential drivers, but I think they could have done it in a better fashion. But yeah, I mean, that's just my opinion.
All right, we'll turn it over to Mike.
I'm going to go with Jim's honorable mention in the confusion at the end of Gateway, but not the confusion surrounding race control, the confusing decision by Joseph Newgarden's crew and somebody else's crew who's escaping. Was it Wickens' team?
Iowa.
Sorry, Iowa. I was looking at Gateway on the schedule here. Yeah, the ending of Iowa where Newgarden's team pitted and I think it was Wickens was the other crew who went in there.
Yes.
When it just seemed like too big of a gamble when we didn't know what was going on with race control. So maybe all of that into one big ball of disappointment.
And I gained a lot of respect for Wickens after that, because if you heard his radio message, which was also not safe for work, so if your boss is around, don't pull that up on YouTube right now. But yeah, Wickens was very despondent on the radio after that. So again, our nominees for whatever you want to call this category, biggest boneheaded decision of the year, bad pass of the year, whatnot. We got the penalty issued to Sebastian Bourdais at Long Beach after his epic overtake.
Good pick.
We got Gabby Chavez situation where he was replaced by, I think Jess said everybody but his brother, Matt Harding. And the confusing ending at Iowa in which Joseph Newgarden and Robert Wickens basically threw away points because they were confused as if they were going back to green or not. So Jim had a little practice at this one today, and Mike's going first. But on Twitter, Jim asked people who had the best non-winning drive of the season. But we'll make it a little easier for you guys. So who had the best single race performance this year, winner or not? And just say which driver and which race you are referencing. So we'll go with Mike first.
Best dominating performance was Rossi's win at Long Beach. And I mean, Rossi's win at Mid-Ohio was equally as impressive. Best non-winning drive of the year was Sebastian Bourdais. You know, I think Jim mentioned earlier at Long Beach, or there was another race, Mid-Ohio, that he was passing cars left and right. So that would be my Rossi and Bourdais would be my picks there.
Let's narrow it down to one. Which one did you pick over the other?
Bourdais at Long Beach.
Bourdais at Long Beach. All right. Jim's turn. Pick it. Pick one.
Oh, boy. man. I'm flipping through. I think it's got to be a Rossi race. I just got to figure out which one I want to pick.
You're kind of spoiled for choice. I mean, it could be Indy. It could be Phoenix. It could be Pocono. It could be, I mean, even Sonoma. I mean, geez.
That's why I put Sonoma on that poll you were referencing, but now there was enough people who might have convinced me that Indy was more impressive just because of what he did on those restarts. So yeah. Oh man, it's hard to go against Will at Indy though. Man. I'm gonna go with Rossi at Indy because of the show he put on and how entertaining it was. And it was big for Will to win the race, but it was more important, I think, for maybe IndyCar as a whole, for somebody to really dazzle the crowd and people watching, and Rossi did that.
All right, Jess?
Well, I think he did it more at Sonoma than he did at Indy, only because of this situation and the pressure that he was under, and he still drove his heart out. I that was probably one of the best one-person races I've seen in a long time.
All right, so our nominees for best single race done by a driver this season was Sebastian Bourdais at Long Beach, even though he was quote unquote taken out by idiots, I think is what he said. We got Alexander Rossi going from worst to, I believe, third, right? At Indy?
Fourth.
And then Rossi at Sonoma, where he had the early issue with Marco Andretti, but had some spectacular passes on his way back to, I believe, a seventh place finish.
All nominees were non-winners?
All right, I get it. Yes, all nominees are. Hey, look at that, Jim. You got some influence. You got some clout on there on social media. You got the brains churning today. Moving on. This one is named after probably our favorite person here at Pit Lane Parlay. And, of course, that's Jay Fry. So this category will start with Jess. And so in Jay Fry We Trust, which is the hashtag that we started quite a while back because he's literally one of the nicest people and an excellent leader for IndyCar. This is the Jay Fry Award for the best off-season decision. Now, that could be whether it's adding a certain track, signing of a particular driver, a team getting rid of a driver to help their team, adding a certain sponsor, anything like that. The Jay Fry Award of Excellence for the best off-season decision. We'll start with Jeff's.
Okay, stupid question here, but off-season before 2018 or off-season that we're currently in?
From September of 2017 to St. Pete of 2018.
Okay. Oh, man. That is rough. I'm going to say bringing back Portland. Like I said before, that was a great show. It had an amazing crowd. So I think that that has to be my pick.
Safe to say, I think Jess is going to Portland next year. I'm just guessing, spitballing here.
I might have already booked my flight.
So along with Brazil and Argentina, Jess will make it to Pocono or Portland next year. Even though I don't think Brazil and Argentina will happen next year, but whatever. Mike is up next.
I referenced this earlier in one of my answers. I'm going to go with Wickens to Schmidt-Peterson, a move that paid off immensely. You know, without his injury at the end of the year, probably would have finished ahead of his teammate in points and, you know, pole first race of the year, multiple podiums, some really outstanding finish. And he really seemed to, as the season went along, understand what it took to, you know, be a winner and be week in and week out. So Robert Wickens and Sam Schmidt are my pick on this one as well.
All right, my man Jim Aiello.
I want to go with the patron saint of your of the podcast here and go with Jay Fry.
Yeah.
And say that the car. I mean, that was the best off-season change that IndyCar has made. It was what fans wanted. It's what drivers wanted. As much as drivers complain about things throughout the season, this is the kind of car that they said they wanted, and he gave it to them. I know the oval racing wasn't exactly where they hoped it would be, but the road course racing was much better, spectacular at certain places. And like I said, fans love the look of this car in terms of some of the things he's adding. I think he's opened it up to the way that he and IndyCar kind of put this whole thing together. He's opened it up to the possibility of adding a third OEM, which would be massive for the series. So yeah, for me, hands down, best off-season change was the addition or whatever you want to say was the new car.
Is it? How do we go about copywriting patron saint Jay Fry? How do we get that to be done?
I think we got our next T-shirt.
I was just saying, is that going to offend some people out there? I don't know. That sounds like an excellent shirt idea to me, if you ask me. So the patron saint Jay Fry Award of Excellence for best off-season decision nominees are Portland coming back to the schedule, Wickens going to Schmidt-Peterson Motorsport, and the new car introduced by IndyCar that was not only good looking, but great to see as far as producing some pretty quality races this year. So we got your best answers for best off-season decision. And unfortunately, I didn't find a name for this one because there was nobody I wanted to slap because, you know, Jay Fry is obviously excellent. So for the worst off-season decision, we need to know as far as bad move, track getting kicked off the schedule, sponsor leaving, anything like that. Jim, what do you think the worst off-season decision was?
All right, I'm not going to throw a specific shade at AJ Foyt Racing, but I will say that Connor Daly has proved time and time again to be among the more popular drivers in the paddock. You know, even if you love him, hate him, or whatever, most people seem to love him. He was, you know, he did a lot of hard work this offseason trying to promote the series on the Amazing Race and doing all that stuff. So I think it wasn't great that no team was able to sign him and get him a ride. I know he drove a little bit with Harding this year, but a guy as popular as him, especially in Indy, probably should have a ride in the series. So I think that for the series as a whole, wasn't great that Connor Daly didn't have a car this year.
All right, Jess.
I'm going to go with Renee Binder. that was a seat that could have been used for so many other people who I think would have been a better fit. And that's all I'm going to say.
I couldn't help but hear Jim laughing on that one. We'll go to Mike.
Well, I only laughed at the name pronunciation.
Oh, is it Renee Binder? Is that what we're going with now?
Yeah. I just liked Binder. I thought that was funny. Sorry.
He's Binder on the show, and he'll always be Binder. Mike?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with... I had my answer, and then I lost it. I'm going to go with it not seeming like Juncos Racing had much of a plan put together coming into the season with all of the eventual driver moves. They, you know, Alfonso Celis and Kaiser, and there seemed like there was a lot of change that didn't seem like it was kind of well thought out before the season. I think they could have actually been a half decent rookie team if not for their possible lack of, I'm not going to say lack of preparation, but I don't think they thought everything through.
All right. So, and they do seem like a kind of a shoot first, aim later kind of team, because I don't know exactly what they gained out of running Piggott and Saavedra in that Indy 500 for one race. But
right.
Anyways, so the nominations for worst offseason decision was Connor Daly getting fired at AJ Foyt Enterprises, the Renee Binder signing by Juncos, and to tag along with that, the lack of planning and seemingly bad execution by Juncos this season. Moving on to the next one. This is going to go to Mike first, and it is the biggest WTF moment of the year. It's something, a moment that made you go, what? Whether it was something that happened in the race, something that happened within the season, some sort of shocking news that we saw or shocking moment. We will start with Mike on this one.
I'm really glad I get to go first on this one, because as soon as you started reading the question, I knew my answer. And after his European escapades earlier this summer, seeing Santino Ferrucci start popping up at the IndyCar paddock again was very shocking. And I should preface that by saying, obviously, you know, we had him on a couple of weeks ago, and he was very nice to talk to. Jess and I spoke to him at Gateway as well, and you know, very polite. And I think he you know, most certainly is kind of you know, feeling the you know, the burn for his bad decisions. But it was still shocking to see him, you know, regardless of what we think, was still pretty shocking to see him back in any I mean, really in any racing as quick as it did happen.
Yeah, and I think, again, we will say that us three hosts on this show absolutely love Santino Ferrucci, but it was a little weird to see him kind of reappear out of nowhere. So next up is Jim.
Yeah. So I liked what the team did this year quite a bit in a lot of respects, but the way that SPM handled bump day was a WTF moment. That was
good pick.
That was not the way that strategy should have played out. Hinch should have been back out there an hour before when he knew he was on the bubble at 31 30 31 32. He needed to be back out there. They knew they had a quick enough car to do it. Just get him out there, get the lap in and be done with it. And instead they waited to the end, and then they had a mechanical issue, and then we all know what happened after that. So that was the WTF moment of the year for me.
Jess?
Okay, here it is, guys. You knew it was coming. Danica during the month of May. Why? There was just so many little moments that kind of all, you know, piled together to make her month. But obviously, you know, her former team boss even called her a sideshow, and that's kind of all I felt during the month of May. I didn't feel like she actually cared about the race. She was just there for the publicity, and you all know how I feel about her anyways, so that just irked me. So she gets my WTF moment.
Dang, I wish I had a Danica effect queued up right now, but I don't off the top of my head. I believe...
That's shocking.
I believe Danica Patrick holds the record for most consecutive races finished in IndyCar history. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it's somewhere around the 35-ish area where she had finished every race. So I guess that could be your Danica fact of the day. So the nominees for biggest WTF moment of the year was Santino Ferrucci coming back to IndyCar because he did do the one weekend in Detroit. Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports on bump day with Hinch getting bumped. And Danica Patrick in the month of May as a whole. And along with that, she bringing Aaron Rodgers with her because that's no fun for anybody.
I actually have a question for Jess before we continue here. Or a little fact. If you combined Michael Phelps' 22 gold medals with Danica's NASCAR wins, you'd still have 22 gold medals.
Well, if you combined her professional motorsports career wins with Michael Phelps' gold count medal, you'd end up with 23. So it's not like we're not going up by a big margin there. So I guess there's that too. The next one might be a little tough. And that's because it's kind of, and Jess is going to go first on this one. It's going to be up to you guys how you want to define this one. And the category is most disappointing driver of the year. And so that could be for any sort of reasons, whether the driver didn't live up to expectations, whether the driver failed to impress you, or whether they just flat out sucked. So we're going to go with Jess. And I guess maybe one caveat is if a driver came in and we all kind of knew they weren't going to be that good, I don't know if that's necessarily disappointing, more as reaffirming a fact. So we'll start off with Jess here.
Okay. I'm going to have to probably go with Max Chilton. You know, he really had nothing to write home about this season at all. I understand that he was with a new team, but you know, Charlie was doing better than him pretty much the whole year. So I feel like Max was probably the biggest disappointment this year.
Mike?
Oh man. Let's see here. I'm going to go with Kyle Kaiser. I know he only raced a few races, but he had such a good Indy Lights season last year and really the year before as well. And I know the mechanical error or mechanical issue you had at Indy, you can't really blame on him, but didn't really show much in the two races he did finish, which was Long Beach and the Indy GP. Obviously also crashed at Phoenix as well, but I felt a little underwhelmed overall by Kaiser's season.
Jim.
Yeah, there's two I'm trying to decide between. I'm going to go with Graham. I kind of thought with a new teammate, a good teammate too, and Takuma, a guy who's great at helping with the car and things like that, that the qualifying would get better. His average starting spot was 13.2 this year, which was worse than Takuma. He had one podium after having, you know, the two wins last year at Detroit. You know, there were some things outside of his control. Obviously, it's not all on him, but I just kind of thought Ray Hall as a whole was going to take a step forward, and I thought Graham might pull off a win or two this year too. So, yeah, definitely, I think a disappointing year for Graham.
I also think he was involved with three. Let's see, because he hit Pagano at Long Beach, he hit Piggott at Pocono, he hit Piggott at St. Pete. I feel like there was one other one where he like just missed his breaking point and completely clobbered somebody. I can't remember if there was another one. And then I also said I think our preview show at the beginning of the year that Graham was a guy I was kind of worried about because in the low downforce DW12s, so pre-aero kits, Ray Hall wasn't that impressive, and these kind of strayed back to that. And so, yeah, I mean, he did have a couple good showings, but as a whole, he didn't really blow anybody's socks off this year. So I will echo with what Jim said, even though Ray Hall is a fantastic dude on and off the track. But
yeah, I agree.
Most disappointing drivers of the year, we got Max Chilton, Kyle Kaiser, and Graham Ray Hall as our nominees. All right, this next one's a little funner. So feel free to dust off those brains. And Jim is going first. And so this is going to go, this category is our favorite IndyCar Twitter user. And so this doesn't strictly have to be a driver or a team per se. This can just be anybody out there in the IndyCar world. If you just want to give a special shout out to somebody, who is your favorite IndyCar Twitter user? We'll start off with Jim.
I don't know if he listens to your show, but if he does, I'd rather him not hear me complimenting him, which is the the hard part, but I will say I do enjoy a faux willpower on Twitter.
He was a guest on here.
Was he?
Yeah.
So he probably listens, which is unfortunate. And if he's listening, James, you're the worst. But otherwise, no, a faux willpower is a great follow. The Fernando meter was hilarious when he was doing that. He's got the some new t-shirts, which I won't go into any more detail about that, but he's got some new t-shirts out there that are pretty funny. So that was, he's a fun follow for sure.
Jess?
Oh, man, he took mine. which is, you know, I mean, that's good. We're all on the same page here, right? Give me just a second while I pick a different one.
Because that was my pick too.
Hmm?
That was my pick too.
Oh, well, you've got to pick one too.
I thought Jess was going to say Jenna Fryer, so I'm a little confused.
Actually, yeah, it's hard to beat Jenna. you know what? Another funny one is sometimes I get a little overwhelmed, but IndyCar Complainer is kind of funny. Sometimes he kind of makes fun of everybody complaining about everything all the time. So I'll go with him.
Mike?
I'm going to go with Connor Daly. He's, you know, all these IndyCar drivers that do these Instagram polls and whatnot, or Instagram ask a question things. He usually has some pretty funny replies in there that make me laugh. And, you know, he's definitely one of the more active drivers on social media and is generally a pretty good follow. So I'll go with an actual driver here and go with Connor Daly.
All right. So nominations for favorite IndyCar Twitter user was Faux Willpower, IndyCar Complainer, and Connor Daly 22. I'm trying to think if there's anybody I want to give a special shout out to.
Marco does a good job on social, actually.
Yes, he does.
Well, that would require me to give some sort of compliment to Marco, so I'm not sure I'm on board with that. I will say Zach Veach is super friendly on Twitter, and so is Jay Fry, Mike Hall. If you're looking for more quote-unquote famous guys on Twitter who are either driving or associated with the series, all of the IndyCar PR staff are super friendly on social media. Graham is super awesome on Twitter, but yeah, and then Connor is another one. But yes, there's a ton of quote unquote let's just say normal people like us three on social media. And Jim, I guess. Jim's a great follow too, if you guys don't follow Jim Aiello.
Second plug of that's the second plug you've given me.
I can be your personal PR if you want.
I love it.
I'll do it for a Bubs Burger a year or something.
Perfect.
Next one, you're going to have to search your brains in this one. We'll start with Mike. It is your favorite IndyCar sponsor. This could be for a host of reasons, whether you like the stuff they make, whether you like the way their logo looks on a car, whether it's the activation they do off the track, any sort of reason. Favorite IndyCar sponsor, we'll start with Mike.
I will go with Aero Electronics. You know, between the car they built for Sam Schmidt, the insane looking hospitality area they had this year that I jealously walked by many times and never got to walk into, and obviously everything they they did, putting some extra sponsorship on Wickens and Jack Harvey's car during the month of May after Hinchcliffe had been eliminated, is my vote. So I will go with Aero Electronics.
Jim?
Oh, that's interesting. Aero was a good call. It was a good pick. Let me go with a one-off. Actually, not a one-off. I think they did 4 or 6 races, but I got a chance to actually meet the owner of Ruoff Home Mortgage, which is Mark Music. And that guy is just a massive IndyCar fan. And I think if he could be more involved in the series, he would be. He was the guy on the livery of Takuma's car 2 years ago. He was on Carlos Munoz's car at the Indy 500 this year, and he did some other, I think he did Rossi's car a couple times. Anyway, I had a chance to talk with him a couple times. He's just a really good guy, really loves the sport, really cares about the sport. And so, yeah, I'll go through up.
And Jess?
Driven to Save Lives. What they're trying to accomplish is amazing, and I just I ever since Brian passed away and they started their drive to get donors signed up, it's been like a really cool thing to watch. So I'm going to have to say them.
Perfect. And it's interesting that nobody said Lily Diabetes. So that's really weird. I guess they weren't an IndyCar, but you know, I guess, well, I was about to say some not nice things, but I guess we'll just move on from that. I think we just, before we get to the last category here, we'll flip it over to Mike for a quick promo.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, thank you everybody to tuning in all season. Obviously we'll have plenty of content throughout the entire off season. But thank you again to www.podchaser.com that we mentioned at the beginning of the episode for their sponsorship, and the guys from Toronto Motorsports. I talked to their owner last night. He's a super nice dude up in Toronto. So give them a follow and buy some other stuff. Even their diecast cars are super awesome. And we will be giving away an autographed James Hinchcliffe 1/18 scale diecast car. You can find all the giveaway on Twitter by the time the episode is released. And also a quick shout out to at @EliteRacing_ on Twitter. They're a sim racing league. They have iRacing, Project Cars, a bunch of other video game type stuff. Pretty cool. We might do some more teaming up with them in the off season, possibly. And lastly, before we get to our final question, our awesome Patreon subscribers. We didn't do anything goofy like last week when all the Patreon subscribers made fun of Matt's Chicago Bears. But you know, George Butts, Colin Taylor, David Lighting, and Michael, I don't know how to say his last name now that we get to it, but I'm going to say Goodyear. And if I got that wrong, Mike, please send me a message on Twitter and my bad. And thank you guys for, you know, subscribing already. And with that, we will turn it over to Matt for the last question.
Quick to jump on the Bears, but we didn't lose to the Buccaneers this week. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Yeah. Don't got too much to say this week.
did you see how Ryan Fitzpatrick looked like Conor McGregor in the post game press conference? That was pretty awesome.
That's Fitz magic to you.
You see that corner in Miami, trademarked that thing. Fitzpatrick is now officially Fitzmagic.
Oh, boo.
I know. Okay,
capital. I'm with you. So thanks again to everybody who's been tuning in today and, you know, kind of all season. We really do appreciate the support and you guys taking the time to listen to us. And this is our first ever Pit Lane Parlay Award show presented by Podchaser. And so we do appreciate you guys listening in. Maybe we can throw a Patron Saint Jay Fry sponsorship somewhere on there next year. So the last category, and we're going to start with Jess in this one. Since we did do the most disappointing driver of the year, we do want to take a quick shout out and give a shout out to maybe some of the drivers who were the most improved this season, whether that is they had a couple rough years in the past and did really well this year, or if they started off the season kind of on the back foot and ended the season really strongly with some good performances. However you want to look at that, the most improved driver of 2018, Jess.
I am looking right now. Give me just a second while I make my final decision.
But, Danica.
Yeah, for sure. Probably not going to be Danica. He didn't do horrible, but I don't know. I really feel like my biggest, improvement over if we do several seasons is going to have to be Rossi.
It's not a bad pick.
Yeah. He just did really, really well all season. Obviously we had several, choices for him being the best drive of the season. I feel like he's finally coming into his own in IndyCar, so to speak. Everybody kind of wasn't a fan of him when he first came over because he was kind of using it as just a in-between time, but I think he really finally found his stride, and I think he did so well this year.
Yeah, and I think if we're looking at history, we can trace it back to Watkins Glen, where it seems like everything just finally came together for him, or even sooner than that, because he was on the podium a bunch before Watkins Glen. So somewhere in the middle of 2017, I feel like I clicked for him, even though he did get the Indy 500. And I was one of those who was very upset that it felt like Rossi was coming here for a pit stop before going back to F1, and now he's obviously... I don't know, a god of racing after this year. That was epic. Cool.
Yeah, it was.
We'll turn it over to Mike here.
I'm going to go with Ryan Hunter-Reay. We're going to stick with the Andretti theme here. You know, before this year, he hadn't won since 2015 at Pocono, I think. But he was, you know, much more consistent. Plenty of podium finishes, plenty of top five finishes. Obviously, the win in Detroit and the win in Sonoma at the last race of the year, where he was awesome all weekend. But outside of, you know, a fuel issue in Gateway that, you know, he couldn't really control, and maybe a few other races that he had some bad luck at, he really had just a good year. So I'm going to go with Ryan Hunter-Reay, and I think he definitely improved on his bad luck of the last couple of years.
And before we get to the gym, I think all three of us do want to say thanks to Jim Iello again for joining us. This is the second time, and hopefully definitely not the last time. And we really appreciate you coming on whenever you got a free moment. And we really appreciate you taking the time to do the award show with us, our first ever award show. So we really do appreciate you coming on, Jim.
No, I'm honored to be a part of the first award show. That's awesome.
Hopefully many more. So we'll turn it over to Jim for his most improved driver.
Yeah, I'm sorry to keep the Andretti theme going, but I'm doing it. I'm going with Zach Veach, and it's the mid-season flip over. And it's not just on track, though. That was impressive as well. I mean, I'm looking at his numbers now. He had one top 10. He had the Long Beach when the yellows kind of flipped everything. And that was pretty much it for the first 11 races. And it really just wasn't quite happening for him. And then he finished. Then he went on that run of 1, 2, 3, 4, I think, well, yeah, four top 10s in a row. Showed some really good progress on track. After Pocono, Alexander Rossi said that we're going to start seeing him on some podiums real soon here, winning poles, doing that kind of thing. I also think it was massively impressive that guys like Ryan and Marco and Alex, guys who've been around the series for a while, were crediting him with what he was doing in tests to get the team ready at certain tracks. So he was contributing as much as some of those veterans, and I really think we're going to see him take an even bigger step forward next year. But I thought his second half improvement was pretty great.
Yeah, and as I think I mentioned on Twitter, was that it seemed like the races he did well at, maybe outside of Long Beach, obviously, but the races he really did well at the second half of the season were races he had a chance to test for, like Mid-Ohio, like Portland, and even, you know, Sonoma. I mean, he didn't have some things go his way, but he was still, you know, very pacey all weekend. So to recap, for our most improved drivers of 2018, we got Alexander Rossi, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and Zach Veach. And so again, everybody out there, we really do appreciate you guys listening in. We appreciate Podchaser, Toronto Motorsport, and Elite Racing for sponsoring the show. And I think if we got nothing left, we can give the green light to Jess to go ahead and sign this off.
Yeah, Jess, go right ahead.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcast Elite Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.